Welcome to Education Currents, a show designed to provide current educational news and commentary from a Christian worldview. The greatest resource any community has is its children, and by providing for them the best possible education, we are providing for ourselves and future generations. Join us as we explore the latest social and political issues surrounding education. Here are your hosts, Paul Tooley and Dr. Rose Gamblin.
Welcome to Education Currents. The title of our show today is Teach or Not to Teach? That is the question. And we're going to talk today about ideas, important ideas for teachers, for educators, and how to really teach. You know, we want to get away from that old formulaic way where, you know, stand up in front of a class, say, okay, open your textbooks, turn to page 395, Billy, you start reading, and then do a round robin reading through the class, and then assign them to do the checkup questions, and then tell them there'll be a quiz tomorrow on it. You know,
Yes.
Then all this assessment stuff that we've been talking about the last 2 weeks is out the window.
Because right.
I've got to inspire. I've got to make them want to do this. I've got to be excited about it myself.
So we're going to go through some beliefs about teaching as opposed to not teaching.
One preamble to all of this. The funny thing is, with No Child Left Behind, we struggle in American education. But the fact is that our knowledge of how to teach and what to teach has never been greater.
That's right.
In the United States, when you go as a teacher to professional development, to brain research councils, you have some of the richest and best knowledge, and you take this all back in your basket to your school, and wham, the door gets slammed in your face because, we got to be prepared for the state exams.
Mm-hmm.
But we have some fantastic knowledge. I think we know better how to teach in theory than we ever have, and yet we're doing a worse job at it. So that's a pity.
Well, number one on the list of to teach or not to teach really is taken from Covey, and that is to begin with the end in mind.
Yes.
So translate that into teacherese.
Well, you should really organize whatever class you're teaching into units. So I'm going to present a unit. You should know how long the unit's going to last. You should know exactly what you want your students to accomplish at the end of that. You should create a three-column chart for yourself. The first column should be what you think your students know. You know, where do you think they are in the knowledge of what you're about to teach? The second column should be what you want them to know. And then the third column is saved for the end is what they have learned. And you can have a matching thing for each student to fill out. Three-column thing that they'll keep in their binder that they're going to bring to class every class. And the first thing would be what I know about this subject, what I would like to find out, and then what I've learned. And so it kind of matches. So you know exactly. And you should narrow it down. I mean, be specific. Pick 5, 6, 2, 3, whatever point mm-hmm. of precisely what you want them to know.
And then
you're going to design your entire unit around that. With those focal points, just like you would design an article, you'll take these. Those will be your paragraphs. Those things that you want to know will be your, and I put mm-hmm. that in quotes, your paragraphs or your classes, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
So you focus on that, focus on that, focus on that, focus on that. And then at the end, your assessment will be to assess, did I succeed?
Now, number two, make good use of the 10-2 theory, which is affectionately known as wait time.
Yeah.
How do teachers use wait time?
Well, one of the things with wait time that I found rather interesting was that they developed this theory by going down and just studying. I mean, they didn't start off with wait time. They found the teachers that were successful. The ones that had the highest results of testing, there we go again, in their classes. So then they started studying them to find out what the effective habits were of a good teacher. And one of the overwhelming things they found was the teachers waited when they would ask a question. And they would wait. After they asked the question, they would wait. And then when the student said the answer, after the student said the answer, they would have another wait time. And then they formulated this and said, okay, everybody should do this because this works. Well, the fact is, it doesn't necessarily work if you're doing it formulaic. If you're sitting there, okay, I'm going to count to 5 in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a lot that goes on behind that. The question you ask, for instance.
That's right.
Is it important? Is it fitting in with your plan? Is it flowing naturally from what you've been teaching? If you ask a question that nobody has the answer to, you're going to sit there and do all the wait time you want, and everybody's going to look at you blinking like toads in hailstorm, and they're not going to say anything because they don't know. So you have to be asking good questions. That's a part that was so missed in our professional development. Oh, wait time. So everybody was wait time. Well, it didn't necessarily translate because you have to be asking good questions.
That's right. Number three, help students assess and use prior knowledge at the beginning of each unit of study. Okay. Don't ever skip this step.
Right. That's what I said about the chart. Okay. That's what I said about the chart. What do I know about this subject? What do I want to learn? And then what have I learned? There are other charts you can use. There's many of them that you can do for pre-assessment. You can do pre-testing. You can do all those kinds of things. But you do want to find out what their schema is concerning what you're about to teach, because that's your jumping off point. That's your platform. And you have to figure that out. Now you're going to have, you know, if you have 32 kids in your class, you have 32 different levels. So you're going to have to average things out and try to scaffold some kids.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, there's a concept.
Well, I think it's good for the students.
Yeah, there's a concept called scaffolding. And that's an important concept. And that's where you start building your scaffolding. And the idea of scaffolding, just like if you're repairing a building, you build a scaffold so your workmen can get up and work on the building. You don't try to say, oh, paint that fourth floor up there, and there's no scaffold to climb up to do
it. That's right.
So we do that with our students. We want to build a scaffold to allow them to stand on to start gaining the knowledge, and then eventually we take the scaffolding away more and more until they can do it on their own. So there's where you start building your scaffolding, by where they are. You need to meet them where they're at. Not
That's
just assume
so
that,
crucial.
Oh, they're
that
in the fifth
so
grade, they
crucial.
Should know this. And if they don't, tough luck. Well,
yeah.
You're
oh,
not teaching.
Wow, that's so true. Okay, number four, have students process and summarize their learning inside and outside of class.
Yes. That's important, and do it more than do it in.
That's a hard concept for right. some subjects to do it, and for some
well,
teachers
some
to
great,
do it.
Well, there's great protocol, and if you look up on the internet, even you can get great ideas. There's a game called Cranium. Every teacher should get that, and it's a game that has both. It hits the tactile, it hits the visual, and it's a game, but you can adapt it to your students. And here's an example. In that game, there's a little blob of Play-Doh. So you go to your student, let's say you're teaching science, and you go to your student and you say to them, what is a water molecule? You plop down the Play-Doh, say, show me with Play-Doh. Okay, now a tactile student's going to take that and they're going to form the atoms and put them together, you know?
Yeah.
You might get a crayon and a paper to another student, say, what is a water molecule? You know, so you get them to summarize in whatever way is really their way of being able to express themselves the best and the most clearly. So you use all these different types of things. One of the things in Cranium, and you can do it with a spinner if you really want to have a lot of fun in class. And then the spinner goes around and they say, it'll say Play-Doh. So now you have to answer it in Play-Doh, or you spin it and it comes around and says crayon and paper, or you spin it in acting. Act out is one of them. So, okay, you three students, act out a water molecule for me.
You know, you're telling me all these wonderful things, but I have to play the devil's advocate here and say, I am a very busy teacher, and I don't have time with all this faulty Roy. I just need to get the information in their head. I don't want them playing with Play-Doh and crayons and everything. What would you say to that kind of a teacher?
You're not teaching.
You're fired.
You're not teaching. No, and I'd say you're just
fired.
I'd say you're in the wrong profession. You're in the wrong profession. You don't have a passion.
Yeah.
You don't have a passion, and it's not going to work out for you or your students very well. You need to get there and inspire them. They, you know, I can't tell you how many times I've had students, can't wait to get to Mr. Tooley's class. Can't wait to get there. I want to get there. That's the class I want to go to. Because we're going to be doing something that really is inspiring and fun. And, you know, all honest, true learning is fun.
Well, that's a novel idea. We need to inform some of the middle schools that this is the case, because
to give them a break, too, they're cumbered down with this No Child Left Behind. But then, too, there are a lot of teachers that just aren't inspired people. They should never have been teachers.
Okay, now the next one has to do, we've been talking about assessment, and it says use homework as formative assessment data rather than as a management tool. Explain that.
Okay, don't use homework as punishment. Now, okay, if you guys aren't good, you're going to have 5 pages of homework tonight. that's a way to manage your class. But the problem is it takes learning and it distorts it. It perverts it. And it takes it out of the realm of learning. So you should never use it that as a tool to manage your classroom.
Well, what we can do is I'm thinking about all the ways that teachers need in this day and age, classroom management is one of the biggest deficits.
Right, but you're talking to a huge difference between a private school and a public school.
Yes.
And I've taught in both. When I taught at the private school, where the parents were paying $10,000 to $15,000 a year, I had all their names on speed dial, so if I was having any trouble, just pull out my cell phone and start hitting the button and straighten up quick.
Well, we're going to take a break here, but when we come back, we'll continue with to teach or not to teach. We'll be right back. You've been listening to Education Currents. Be sure and like us on our Education Currents Facebook page and consider joining MRG Media in this radio ministry. You can call us anytime at 301-824-3162. That's 301-824-3162. Or write to MRG Media at P.O. Box 413, Smithsburg, Maryland, 21783. That's P.O. Box 413, Smithsburg, Maryland, 21783.
Welcome back. Again, we're talking about to teach or not to teach. How do we really teach a subject and inspire it? Not worrying about just testing at the end, but how do we formulate it, an idea that we want to give to our students and an inspiration? And we've come down to the fact that we have to be prepared beforehand. We have to already know what we want as our outcomes before we start teaching something. We need to be inspired about what we're about ready to teach. We need to be on fire about it ourselves. We need to be excited about it. We want to pass that inspiration on to the students. We want to engage them mentally. Not, you know, sometimes this day and age, engagement just means I'm doing some kind of gimmick that makes my kids look like they're all busy. But that's not true engagement. If I'm going to be teaching these kids about molecules, I want them to be engaged with molecules and wanting to know about molecules in their brains.
Amen. Okay, well, the next point also deals with assessment. It says use a wide range of assessment strategies, including pre-assessment, and I think you've touched on this, and help students develop strong self-assessment habits.
Yes, you need to self-evaluate as a teacher. You need to teach. Then you do an assessment, and then based on that assessment, you reteach.
Now, is this the same as helping students become reflective in their learning?
Well, that's what you want to teach your students. You want your students to also learn how to learn, assess, and then relearn. And parts of that, like for instance, let's take a simple way to do that. On homework or class assignments, every student should have the opportunity to fix all of their mistakes. Now, I'm not saying on hard assessments at the end of a unit. That's a different story. Depending on the school, I would say that the school should have a unified policy on those, how they're done, so that we're getting the same grade means the same thing across the board. But with homework and classroom assignments, every kid should have the opportunity to fix it. Now, you can, as a teacher, say, okay, I'll give you 80% of that grade if you fix it. Or you can say, look, I'll give it all to you. If you want to take the extra work, you fixed it, you get the good grade. You know, you can decide that, but that allows a student then to check themselves, to assess themselves. Therefore, now their homework isn't just this thing that they turn in and get a letter grade on and then throw it in their book bag and it's lost, but it now becomes a learning tool and a self-assessing tool so that they begin to think about their own thinking. That's what you
yes.
want to get students to do.
Yes.
Think about their own thinking.
Metacognition.
Metacognition. Think about their own thinking.
In fact, it's not inappropriate to have that homework something of value and say, every problem that I put on the final test will have been taken from your homework. So even though you have it graded and everything, you say that and use that homework to practice for the test, to review. Right.
And that homework, I mean, the work, the classwork, I never gave homework per se. I gave classwork that I thought was important for self-assessing, for my assessment purposes also. If they got it done in class sometime, that was fine. But
yes,
if they didn't,
they
took it home for homework. But it was never homework just for homework's
sake. I called it independent work.
Yeah.
I wanted a few problems for you to try to wrap your own brain around that, you know, you weren't working in teams or anything. But at some point, often the problems came back and we worked them in teams as well, just for additional practice. Okay, the next one is use the research that we know about learning styles, multiple intelligence, modality preferences, second language learners, etc., as a check and balance system on your own instructional decisions.
Yeah, you should. Now, I'll tell you one thing. You can get lost in this pretty quickly because individual researchers have different categories. You know, this one will be talking about modality.
Oh, yeah, there's like 30 major different
and you can get lost in there, and pretty soon you're like overwhelmed. How am I, you know, you start looking at this student, you look at the multiple intelligences, then you look at modality, and you look at, are they tactile? And pretty soon, the 30 students now is multiplied times 30.
Yeah.
And you're having, so basically.
Combinations and permutations. Yeah,
basically, just all you need to really worry about are the modes. Are they tactile? Are they visual? Are they a combination? And then you don't really even need to prescribe for each student. All you need to do is provide the opportunity and the choice.
Yes.
And students will choose that for themselves.
Well, and not only that, I think a well-balanced brain needs to be exposed to all the to the three major ones. So when you're presenting a lesson, you just go ahead and present it in a tactile, kinesthetic, and visual way. Make that as part of your, because practice makes perfect.
And then in your assessments, give those same opportunities. They can
choose.
That's
right.
They can choose. You can make up three different types of exams that focus on those things, and they can choose which one they want to do. And then it gives you that assessment of what they've learned.
I have discovered that, you know, some of the, what we consider brilliant students, because they're very good at the way schools operate, are so flustered when they do have these other opportunities like, okay, now you've, the last question of the math quiz might say, draw a picture on the back, or draw a cartoon depicting how to find the radius of a circle, or how to find the circumference of a circle. And just to see them go, I can't draw, you know, I've never had to answer a question like this. And just to see them get all flustered, and then to be able to say, just do the best you can. Some people will be good at this, some people won't be as good, but it helps the other part of our brain, so that we will be whole-brained learners and not just thinking with half our brain. And they do try, and they are pretty proud of their.
Well, it's fascinating. One of the things that has come out in research is that they did a research on medical students, and they found out that students that barely scraped by ended up making the poorest doctors when they made it. The second poorest, though, were the straight A students.
Yes.
The straight A students were the second poorest doctors. The best doctors came from those that were what we would call B average, but I don't know if they used in medical school letter grades, but you know, 89, 85, 90, you know, somewhere in there. Those were the ones that made the best doctors because they tended to not be retentive and, you know, and exact and, you know, have tendencies toward OCD and expecting everything to be perfect. They tend to be personable and they listen to their patients. And so the same thing, we can't put too much stock in grades, what grades are given.
Yes, I agree. Okay, let me go on because we're coming to the end of the show. Make learning active and relevant.
Absolutely important. But how are you going to do that when textbook manufacturers and the rest don't do it? You show me one math book
that is
relevant.
Yeah, this is where teachers really have to use their professionalism.
Yeah, now I would use a math, and you're going to have a tougher time again in public school, not to pick on it, but because of the No Child Left Behind and the restrictions that are placed, than you will in private school. I like having a math textbook because then you can use it as an outline for what concepts I want to cover. But you need to jump out of that yourself. You know, if you're going to be studying volume, for instance. You know, I one of the things I used to do to the kids, I brought these cubes I had of wood, these little wood blocks that measured 1 by 1 by 1 inch. So then I would give them cardboard and say, I want you to construct a box that will hold 12 of these. I want you to construct a box. And then they just sat down and they tried to work it out. They were given a ruler.
Yes.
So they tried to work. And then when they got done, another thing I did with water that was fun, only can do this in private school, but they had to calculate how many cups there were in a quart. And so, or a pint, and I used a pint, but you could use anything. So then they had to sit in a chair and we put a pint over. And when they calculated, we took that water that they calculated and we poured it in. If they calculated too much, it would overflow onto them. So they're like, now we didn't force anybody to do that. I mean, they voluntarily, we said, okay, sit there. And if a student had said, I don't want to do that, we wouldn't have forced them to do
that. On a hot day, that would be such a fun thing to do.
But they were like, and it was a big.
Now, you could probably do that in the middle school in my county.
Or we were doing pendulums, and we actually took them out. We tied a bowling ball onto the swing set. And then we would have them stand there and hold the bowling ball right so they kiss it. And then they let go and they had to stand there as it swung away and swung back to teach them.
Yeah.
After we talked about the theory and they all agreed, yeah, it'll never come back to its starting point. It won't. But most of them, of course, would duck out of the way when the thing was coming back. But it was a thing that really sealed it in their brains. And they loved doing it. They never forgot that concept ever. You know,
that's so cool.
Inspire.
Yes, inspire. Okay, analyze the levels and kinds of thinking that are going to be required for the learning objectives.
Super important, and it's so often neglected.
Now you can do this with questions.
Oh yeah, what I've seen, for instance, in a third grade math book where they decide they're going to start introducing algebra, and we know by brain research that most third graders just don't have that part of their brain yet, that abstract part of their brain.
Yeah.
So we're doing crazy things like that they're not ready for. And instead of saying, okay, can they learn this? Is this an ability? I mean, we need to understand when we're talking 10, 11 years old, they are concrete thinkers. They're
That's
not abstract
right.
thinkers. They're totally concrete. So when we fool around with abstract ideas and then we can't figure out why they're not getting it, well, duh. Yeah.
That's right. And I think we're at number 10, use student work and classroom assessment data combined with standardized achievement results to inform your own instructional decisions as a teacher.
Yes, the standardized, not so much, but you can use it school-wide. Oh, I look at,
yes,
look at it and say, okay,
and say,
well, we're really low in this school in social studies, or we're low in English.
Yeah, I like to use it like that.
That's how that's properly used.
And it's not used that often, but it should be. It
that's
really
the only
should be.
Purpose for it, really. But then the other stuff, you need to inform your own teaching. You need to inform it every time you assess. It should be as much about you as it is about the student.
Now, for the last one, it's going to lead into next week's topic, which is going to be about classroom management. It says, always remember kids are people and deserve to be treated accordingly. When setting up routines and procedures, focus on learning rather than compliance and control. What do you think about that?
Absolutely. And the kids should take part. You should spend probably 3 weeks at the beginning of your school, a session a day, developing classroom rules, everybody's consensus. Mm-hmm. And when you get done, it should be the kids' rules. And then you boil them all down to about 5 or so, depending on the age level of how many they can do. You boil everybody's ideas down. And there's a whole process that I know to do this. I won't go into it now. They're the ones that wrote them, so they'll obey them.
That's right.
All right. Well, our time is up for this week, and we were glad you could join us at Education Currents. Please don't forget to go to our website at educationcurrents.com. That's educationcurrents.com. And go to our Facebook page and like us on it. And we'll see you next week.
Keep learning.
You have been listening to Education Currents, a production of MRG Media Ministries. For more on this or to contact us, go to mrgmediaministries.com. That's all one word, mrgmediaministries.com.